Have you ever been in like contracts class, you know, and thought, okay, so I get this whole breach of contract thing, right? Like I understand the basics, but then you stumble upon this case and it just kind of throws you for a loop. Like the usual rules just don't seem to quite apply.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Sometimes you hit these cases that make you rethink everything.
Well, that's exactly what we're diving into today. The case of Chronister Oil Company v. Unocoal Refining and Marketing. This case throws up a really fascinating twist into what we usually think of as a standard breach of contract scenario, especially when we throw in the wild world of market prices and how they can change so unexpectedly.
Totally. And we've got some really great materials to unpack here. We're going to look at some analyses that talk specifically about Chronister. We'll look at a detailed case brief that breaks down all the facts and all those legal arguments. And then we'll also look at a more concise standard brief that really just hits on the core legal principles at play.
Awesome. So what's the goal here? What are we trying to accomplish with this deep dive?
Well, our goal is to really dissect this case, take it apart piece by piece and understand how the legal framework of contract breach intersects with the unpredictable realities of commodity markets. How do those two things work together?
Okay, so let's set the stage. Take us back in time.
All right, so picture this. The year is 1990. We've got Chronister Oil, a company that trades oil and gas. They enter into this agreement to sell 25,000 barrels of gasoline to Unocal. The price is set at 60.4 cents per gallon, and this gasoline needs to be delivered through the Colonial Pipeline by March 5th. And that's where we hit our first snag.
Oh, what happened?
Well, Chronister had actually subcontracted the physical delivery of the gasoline to Enron. And on March 5th, when Enron tried to deliver the gasoline to the pipeline, it was rejected. Why? Excessive water content. Didn't meet the quality standards. So Chronister missed that critical delivery deadline that was so clearly laid out in the contract.
Uh-oh. So what did Unocal do? I mean, they needed that gasoline, right?
Exactly. Unocal didn't just sit around twiddling their thumbs. They had to act fast. They immediately went into their own inventory and tapped into their own gasoline supply to cover the shortfall. They even gave Chronister a little bit of breathing room. They pushed the deadline to March 7th to see if Chronister could maybe pull it together and provide the gasoline that actually met those quality standards.
Okay, so they got a little bit of extra time. Were they able to meet the new deadline?
Unfortunately for Chronister, no, they weren't. They did offer to deliver a replacement shipment, but it wouldn't be until mid-March. And by that point, Unocal had already covered their needs using their own inventory, so they declined that later delivery. Chronister eventually ended up selling that initial batch of rejected gasoline to another refinery, Aquecta Refining, but they had to sell it at a lower price, 55.3 cents per gallon.
Ouch. Yeah, that's gotta hurt. And I'm guessing this is what led to the whole lawsuit, right?
You got it. Chronister sued Unocal, arguing that Unocal was actually the one in breach of contract for refusing to accept that mid-March delivery.
So they're saying Unocal was in the wrong.
Yeah. And as you can probably guess, Unocal fired back with a counterclaim, their argument. Chronister was the one who initially breached the contract by missing that initial delivery deadline.
This is getting complicated. So what happened next? Did they go to court?
Absolutely. This landed them in court, and in the first round, the district court sided with Unocal. The court said that Chronister failing to deliver that conforming gasoline by March 5th, well, that was the initial breach of contract. That's what kicked off this whole legal battle.
Okay, so the court said Chronister breached first, then what? What about the damages? How did the court figure out what Unocal was owed?
Right, so the district court had to figure out how much Unocal was harmed by this breach. They ended up awarding Unocal about $26,000. And that figure was based on the difference between the original contract price, which remember was 60.4 cents per gallon, and the average cost of Unocal's own gasoline inventory that they had to dip into as a temporary substitute.
Okay, so that makes sense. They're trying to make Unocal whole again by looking at how much extra it costs them to cover the missing gasoline. But what about Chronister? Did they just accept this ruling?
Not so fast. Chronister wasn't happy with this outcome. They decided to take the case up the ladder, and they appealed the district court's ruling to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. And that's where things get really interesting because that initial damages award was ultimately reversed.
Right, seriously, reversed. So what happened? Why did the Seventh Circuit overturn the lower court's decision?
Well, the Seventh Circuit dug into the case, and they focused on a couple of key legal issues. First, they wanted to make sure that Chronister's failure to meet that March 5th deadline really did constitute a breach of contract. And secondly, they wanted to figure out if there was a breach, what was the right way, the legally sound way to figure out damages in this specific situation, especially considering what happened to gasoline prices in the meantime.
Gotcha. So they had to look at whether there was actually a breach. And then if there was, how do you calculate the damages fairly? So how did they address that first question, the whole breach issue?
But what's really interesting here is how directly the appellate court tackled the whole question of breach. They really emphasized this principle of strict liability in contract law.
Okay, so for anyone listening who's maybe still wrapping their heads around contract law, can you break down what strict liability means in this context?
Absolutely. So strict liability in contract law basically means that when you agree to do something under a contract, your intentions or your reasons for not following through, well, they generally don't matter. If you don't deliver what you promised by the date you promised it, you've breached the contract, period.
So no excuses, basically.
Pretty much. The Seventh Circuit was very clear about this. They actually said, in their opinion, liability for breach of contract is normally, and here, strict liability. So it doesn't matter why Chronister's gasoline had too much water or what they tried to do to fix it. The fact that they didn't deliver the right gasoline by March 5th, that right there was a breach of contract, plain and simple.
Wow, okay, so the breach itself is pretty clear-cut under that principle, but I have a feeling the damages are where things get a lot more complex. So how did the Seventh Circuit approach that whole issue?
You're exactly right. This is where it gets nuanced. And this is also where the Seventh Circuit's analysis started to differ from what the district court did. It all boils down to how we figure out the right way to compensate UNICAL and this legal concept of cover.
Okay, cover. That sounds important. So how does that factor into all of this?
Well, the basic idea behind awarding damages in contract law is to put the non-breaching party back in the same financial position they would have been in if the contract had been followed perfectly by both sides. As the court said, the purpose of damages is to put the victim where he would have been had the breach not occurred.
Okay, so you're trying to make the harmed party whole again financially. So how did Unical argue that they should be compensated?
Unical's argument was basically this. They said that by having to use their own gasoline inventory to cover the shortfall after Chronister messed up, they were effectively covering their losses. And they said they should be paid back the difference between what they would have paid Chronister and what it cost them to use their own supply.
So they're basically saying, hey, we had to use our own stuff because you didn't deliver, so you owe us the difference.
Right. But the Seventh Circuit took a closer look at this whole idea of cover, and they specifically looked at it under the Uniform Commercial Code, or UCC.
UUCC. I remember that from law school. Can you remind us what that is?
Of course. So the UCC is this uniform set of laws that governs business transactions across the U.S. And there's a specific part of the UCC Section 2712 that allows a buyer to go out and purchase substitute goods when a seller breaches a contract. The buyer can then sue the seller to recover the difference between what they paid for those substitutes and what the original contract price was.
That makes sense. So if the substitute goods cost more, the buyer can get that extra cost back from the seller who breached. But how does this relate to Onocall and their own inventory?
Well, here's the key point that the court made. Using your own existing inventory isn't the same as going out into the market and buying replacement goods from a third party. Those are two very different actions in the eyes of the UCC.
Ah, okay. So that's a crucial distinction. Onocall didn't buy replacement gasoline. They used what they already had. And this is where those fluctuating gasoline prices come into play, right?
You got it. And this is really where the Seventh Circuit's reasoning gets interesting. Because what happened to the price of gasoline between that original March 5th delivery date and the time when Chronister could have potentially delivered a replacement in mid-March? I'm guessing it went down.
Exactly. The price of gasoline actually dropped during that time. And that's the linchpin of Judge Posner's economic analysis in the Seventh Circuit's opinion. He basically argued that because the market price had gone down, Unocal, by using their own cheaper inventory instead of being stuck with Chronister's gasoline at that higher contract price, well, Unocal was actually in a better financial position because of the breach. Wow, that is so counterintuitive. You automatically think that if someone breaches a contract, the other party is harmed. But in this case, the market shift actually helped Unocal.
It's a wild scenario, right? And Judge Posner actually said something pretty memorable in the opinion. He said, Unocal was made better off by Chronister's breach.
Wow. So they benefited from the breach.
In a way, yes. The court even talked about this economic idea of opportunity cost. Unocal was saying they lost money because they had to use their own inventory. But the Seventh Circuit said, no, that's not a real economic loss because you actually dodged a bullet. You avoided having to buy Chronister's gasoline at that higher price when the market had already gone down.
Okay, so they avoided a worse outcome. That's fascinating.
It is. And Judge Posner also pointed out something really insightful about how these situations usually play out. He said that typically it's the sellers who break contracts when the market price is going up because they can make more money selling their goods to someone else. This case was unusual because the seller broke the contract in a falling market, which actually ended up being a good thing for the buyer.
That's such an interesting point. So, okay, we've talked about the breach. We've talked about the market fluctuations. What did the Seventh Circuit ultimately decide about the damages? Did they uphold the $26,000 that the district court awarded to Unocal?
Nope, they didn't. They actually only awarded Unocal nominal damages, a symbolic amount of just $1.
$1? Wow. So they basically wiped out the district court's entire damage award.
Pretty much. And that really drives home the point of the Seventh Circuit's reasoning. They said that Unocal didn't actually lose any money because of Chronister's breach. In fact, they might have even gained a little. So awarding them a bunch of money in damages just wouldn't be right. Remember, the whole point of compensatory damages is to make up for actual losses, not to give the non-breaching party a bonus.
Right. It's about fairness, not punishment. But wait a minute. If Unocal didn't actually lose money, doesn't that mean Chronister didn't really do anything wrong?
Well, not quite. The court made it very clear that even though Unocal didn't lose money, Chronister did still breach the contract by not delivering the gasoline on time. And to officially recognize that Unocal's contractual rights were violated, they awarded those nominal damages. They basically said, look, you didn't lose money, but you still deserve something to acknowledge that the other party broke the agreement.
Okay, that makes sense. So a symbolic win for Unocal.
Exactly. They actually spelled it out in their opinion. They said that every victim of a breach of contract is entitled to nominal damages, even in the absence of actual losses.
So it's like a legal formality to say, yes, a breach happened, but no real harm was done.
That's a good way to put it.
So for all our law student listeners out there, what are the big takeaways here? What should they be thinking about after this deep dive into Chronister v. Unocal?
All right, so first and foremost, this case highlights how incredibly important it is to follow the terms of a contract to the letter. Especially when you're dealing with commodities like oil and gas, where prices can fluctuate like crazy. That agreed-upon delivery date in the contract wasn't just a suggestion, it was a binding legal obligation.
Right, so don't mess around with deadlines.
Exactly. And second, this case really emphasizes that when we're talking about damages in contract law, we're talking about real, provable economic loss. Not just theoretical losses or what things cost on your internal accounting spreadsheets. Those might not be enough. Especially when the real-world market conditions are telling a different story.
So the market context matters a lot.
It's huge. And then the third takeaway is all about that distinction within the UCC about cover. Using your own existing inventory to make up for a shortfall isn't the same thing as actually going out and buying substitute goods in the market. That act of going to the market and buying substitutes, that's what cover means under the UCC.
Got it. So you can't just use your own stuff and say, hey, I covered the loss.
Nope. The UCC is pretty specific about that.
And then I think the final takeaway, and maybe the most surprising one, is that just because a contract is breached doesn't automatically mean the non-breaching party is financially harmed. Sometimes because of things that are totally outside of everyone's control, like a big market shift, the breach can actually end up being financially beneficial. And in those cases, the court might only award nominal damages just to acknowledge that a breach did technically happen.
Right. It's a great reminder that contract law isn't about punishing people for breaking promises. It's about making things right financially when someone is actually harmed by a broken promise.
It's a really nuanced area of the law.
It is.
So to sum it all up, what's the big lesson we're taking away from Chronister v. Unocal?
I think the big lesson is that there's this complex interplay between being strictly liable for breaching a contract and the real-world economic factors that determine how we calculate damages. And that's especially true in those crazy commodity markets where prices are always moving.
It makes you wonder how this idea of not getting compensatory damages unless you can prove an actual financial loss, how that might apply in other areas of contract law or in markets that behave in unpredictable ways.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thought.
Like, could a breach that seems really bad at first actually turn out to be a hidden advantage in a different context? Makes you think about what contract remedies are really supposed to do and what their limitations are.
It definitely does. Lots to ponder.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
Thanks, everyone.